The best Cork sporting action at the weekend.
One goal to win the title. It's as simple as that.
Can you believe it?
Have you ever seen a try like that?
The Big Red Bench
on Cork
Red FM.
Hello and good evening. You are listening to The Big Red Bench with myself, Orla O'Leary, and an exciting day of sports it was. So Clare, they were playing Limerick, and Clare, they didn't score for about 30 minutes, but they managed to get one goal and 18 points, but not enough as Limerick were 2 goals and 30 points. So coming towards, I think there's 2 games left of the Munster Championships. So it's getting exciting. I reckon we're going to play at home and we're going to come first. But then we had a bit of heartbreak with the ladies' Gaelic football today. It was 3 goals, 7 points, and Waterford 3 goals, 18 points down at Parky Ring. And they suffered a loss last week as well against Tipperary, the first game of the championship. But on the other hand, a bit up the country going to Leinster, Westmeath played Dublin in the Leinster Football Championship after they defeated Kildare in extra time by 4 points. That is crazy. Westmeath made a Leinster football final. And I know 2 people who are very happy about that. My sister's boyfriend is from Westmeath, and she's practically like Westmeath now. She's losing her Cork accent, so the 2 of them are very delighted. And then we have the Women's Champions League. Barcelona played Bayern Munich and it was 4-2 to Barcelona, and they go on to play Lyon in the final on the 23rd of May in Oslo. And now Scottish Premiership, it's not a good time for Hibs. They got 4 red cards in 3 games. It's crazy, and they're what, 5th in the table. It's not too bad, to be fair. They could get a European spot if they tried, but I don't think that's going to happen. But it ended up 2-1 to Celtic in Edinburgh. So I, for one, am delighted. We are now level points at the top. It's just goal difference, messing it all up, you know. I wish it just went by points and they did something with the points at the top of the table. Playoff or something. I think goal difference is very cutthroat, I'll put it that way. But now we're going to hear a bit more about the Premier League. I was speaking to Harry Hayden of the Big Red Bench, so that's coming up next on the Big Red Bench. So I'm joined in the studio once again with Harry Hayden. Say hello, Harry.
How are things, Orla?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad, no. Not too bad.
That's the job. And we're going to do a whole Premier League roundup of this weekend for you. So we'll start off just with Leeds and Burnley. 3-1. That went the way everyone probably thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
First game of the week.
Basically confirms Leeds in the Premier League. They actually went above Newcastle for a time being until Newcastle won on Saturday. So it basically confirms Leeds staying up this year. Obviously they're a bit disappointed they didn't get into the FA Cup final last week, but I think if you'd offered Leeds to finish 15th, they would have snapped the hand off you at the start of the year, so a good win for them as well.
That is true. I actually wasn't expecting them to actually stay in the Premier League. I thought they'd be right back down.
Yeah, and big achievement from Daniel Farke as well, because a lot of people would have been calling for him to be sacked at the start of the season. There was even rumours that he was going to get replaced even after they got promoted last year. So big achievement for him, and Leeds back staying in the Premier League, which is good. So I think we want to see Leeds stay in the Premier League. You know, they're a Premier League club, like.
True, and Ipswich and Coventry City going up.
Yes, yeah.
That's a good one.
The interesting who goes up for the playoffs now. I think everyone will be...
Come on, Millwall!
Everyone will be rooting for Millwall for the atmosphere.
What I'd be gutted about if West Ham got relegated, yeah, and Millwall got promoted, and we never got to see their rivalry. Oh, I'd actually be torn, because Brentford did play West Ham yesterday and they won 3-0. Fair play to Queeveed and all that, clean sheet.
10th clean sheet of the season.
Yeah, so unbelievable. Yeah. But West Ham now are closer to relegation, and it all comes down to later on with Villa and Spurs. What's your predictions for that one?
I actually think Spurs are going to win. I do. I actually think Spurs are going to win, which I really hope I'm wrong with. But I somewhat fancy Spurs, because obviously Villa have a big Europa League game on Thursday. And I don't know, they're still fifth in the league at the moment. They're 6 points ahead of Bournemouth, who are in sixth. So I don't know, I suppose if you do look at it, Villa, I think one more win probably would be enough for them to get over the line to get Champions League football, because obviously fifth gets you Champions League football. But I don't know, I have a feeling Spurs will be a bit more up for it, and Villa will be probably have kind of one eye on that game on Thursday. I don't know, what do you think?
I personally think it's going to be Villa's game to win. Like, yeah, they're going to want to get it out of the way before they go in and play Forest again. Because if they win against Forest, then they're in the final,
Yeah.
So, like, they'd want to put all the focus on that then.
Yeah, and they would have momentum as well, I suppose, if they did win this one.
Exactly.
But I don't know, I just have a bad feeling about it. Maybe it's me being too pessimistic as an Arsenal fan, because obviously I want to see Spurs go down, but who knows? I mean, even if Spurs do win, there's still three games to go and anything can happen in those three games.
It's true. No, I feel like it's actually going to be a very exciting last day of the Premier League.
And West Ham's next game. Bit of an interesting one, because Spurs... So let's say if Spurs don't win today, Arsenal are playing West Ham in their next game.
Ooh.
So then Spurs fans will want Arsenal to win. But then that could also mean Arsenal win the league if they beat West Ham. So
true.
Conflicted if you're a Spurs fan.
I know, I'd actually be delighted if he won the league now, because I'm getting very annoyed at you. Always like, oh, like, we're always second. Be good for you to just win it, even though we'll never hear the end of it. But yeah, it was 3-0 to you against Fulham. Now, that was a positive result compared to last week's.
I mean, I didn't see it coming. I was expecting a bit of a similar performance to last Saturday when we played Newcastle, when, you know, we were extremely nervous. You could tell just from everyone, even in the stadium, sounded nervous. But it was a different... I don't know what happened. It was like the shackles were off. I think a huge part of it was Bukayo Saka come back into the team. I mean, he just makes a massive difference in that Arsenal team. But yeah, I mean, we just blew them away in the first half. It was fairly routine in the second half then. And now, obviously, big, small enough game on Tuesday, obviously, against Atletico Madrid. But yeah, just great win.
And you're going to that.
I am.
And you read something out exciting to me about the TIFO.
Oh, yes, another big TIFO. Yeah, hopefully it'll be better than last year's TIFO against PSG. But apparently it's like the biggest TIFO or something Arsenal have ever produced. But I'm not really concerned with the TIFO. I'm more concerned about the game, to be completely honest.
But you actually did well. 1-0, like, away from home against Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
In a European crowd, like.
We should have had a penalty as well.
Oh, no, that was... I don't like Arsenal, like, saying that right now. But that was a penalty, like, by far. In fairness, he actually did get robbed there. But then Bournemouth, 3-0 against Palace. So that brings them higher up in the table. So now they're in the European spot, the Europa League, and now Bournemouth or Brentford are in the Conference League spot.
Yeah, and if, let's say, I know, I think I said this last week, if Villa win the Europa League, that sixth place, and Villa finished fifth, that sixth place becomes a Champions League spot. So there's certainly a lot to play for Bournemouth, Brentford and Brighton and Chelsea. Even Chelsea could still even sneak into the Champions League.
I don't think they will.
But I mean, hopefully for the neutral they don't. So, there's certainly a lot to play for. But yeah, great win for Bournemouth. I mean, I think Bournemouth and Brentford have never played European football before, so it would be a huge achievement for those two, especially when you consider they're playing in the Championship less than what, 4 years ago now?
True.
So it'd be a huge achievement for those two to get any sort of European football, whether it be the Champions League or the Europa League. But it looks like, I mean, if things stay the way they are, then the two of them could be playing European football next year.
Yeah, that is true, to be fair. And my team are officially playing European football. They got into the Champions League. They beat Liverpool 3-2. And I must say, I was actually fearful when it went 2-2. Like, it was 2-0 at half-time to Man United. Then it went 2-2 after, what, 10 minutes of the second half?
Yeah, they let Liverpool back into the game.
They did.
Mistakes.
They did.
From Ahmed and Lammens, obviously.
Lemon.
I mean, a good win for you. They did well in all fairness, considering, I mean, they blew them away in the first half. It could have been.
Yeah.
Liverpool were probably quite lucky to only get away with two. But they let Liverpool back into it, but they, you know, they stayed strong. They didn't buckle or anything like
Thank
that.
God.
And it was a brilliant finish from Kobbie Mainoo. I mean, it's mental to think that United are third and, like, three games to go, that they're comfortably third. That's where they're going to finish now, probably.
Yeah.
If a disaster happens. When you consider the, like, start of the season they had and, like, how much of a laughing stock they were under.
I know. Like, it was the second Michael Carrick just came in. It was, whoa, what is happening right now?
I mean, would you take him as manager, as a United fan?
For next year?
Yeah.
I'd give him a year. Like, I would honestly give him the year, because he did so much, like, since like Amorim left. And I know a lot of people, even Man United fans, are debating me on this, but like, if we get someone else in, it's gonna be like Amorim 2.0, like.
Yeah,
do you know? So like, just give Carrick the year. What's your opinion on it?
It's tough. I don't know. I think they're in a tough position. I think Carrick has exceeded my expectations, because when he was hired, I was thinking there's no way he's going to get the job. Regardless, I think I was thinking he's going to have to win literally the next 18 games to get the job because of what happened with Solskjaer before when he came in and they gave him the job and it never really worked out for him. But he's done really well. I mean, like, he's gone away to Arsenal and won, he's gone away to Chelsea and won, beat City at home, beat Liverpool at home now. Like, he's comfortably put United third. But I don't know, there's just still that risk, I think, if you give him the job. We saw how kind of it petered out with Solskjaer, where, you know, they kind of reached a limit with him. And, you know, Michael Carrick, he's only had one senior team management job in football outside of this, and that was with Middlesbrough. And the fact as well, United, it's so difficult to judge them at home because they're playing nearly every 2 weeks or every week. Like, that's all they've got, just one game a week. So it'll be difficult next year now when they've got Champions League, they're back in the cup competitions. But, I mean, there's not a huge selection of managers either at the moment out there, but I think they might have their eye on that Bournemouth manager as well, though, Iraola, who obviously is leaving Bournemouth at the end of the season. So we'll have to wait and see.
I know, we would. But no, I will say he did get like a very easy run.
Yeah.
Because like we didn't have European football. I believe by then we were pretty much out of the cup competitions.
Yeah, they were out of all of them.
Yeah, so he got given
just the Premier League.
Yeah, he got given a nice easy run for it.
Yeah. And now you know European football this year.
Yeah, I know. But we do next year. Like, leave us out of it now. Like, we're not a laughing stock anymore. Next season, maybe. But the biggest laughing stock of all is Spurs.
Yeah, Spurs.
And I want to see them go down. They annoyed me last year after winning us in that Europa League final, even though we played chronic as well. But yeah, Villa and Tottenham later.
2 points. 2 points separate Spurs. Obviously, a win for Spurs would take them above West Ham, put them on 37 points. Geez, if Spurs win though, Forest aren't completely out of it, are they? I mean, 39 points. Forest playing Chelsea tomorrow. So it should be a very interesting end to the season. I just realised Crystal Palace are actually down to 15th now in the league.
They are.
But I mean, they won't get relegated.
No, so it really spot 9 points.
Those three teams, yeah. Forest, West Ham and Spurs.
Come on, but, Spurs. Yeah. Come on, you Spurs. Get relegated. No, but what? Yeah, 2 points off West Ham. Yeah, that is actually fairly bad. But West Ham as well are playing next week, isn't it?
Yes, so that would
be a tough one. Like,
West Ham obviously be up for, I think it's their second last home game of the season. So, and I think the fact Spurs are playing Leeds next week, so it's like there'll be a lot of pressure in West Ham. I think as well that Spurs Leeds game is before that West Ham game, so they could, in theory, like let's say if Spurs win both their games, they could be, you know, they could be what, nearly 5 points clear of West Ham. Which, you know, is a real possibility as well. So there'll be so much pressure in West Ham. I don't know, I just fear, I do think Spurs are going to get out of it. I hope I'm wrong, but I think they will. But who knows, they're having a few injury issues at the moment as well. Xavi Simons is out for the rest of the season. But yeah, I just think Spurs' fixtures are a bit more favourable than West Ham's.
And now Man City, they have two games in hand. They face Everton tomorrow at 8. So it's already building up towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Everton's the big one. They've obviously got two games in hand to Arsenal, 5 games left in total. They also have a cup final as well in there to manage as well. Yeah, Everton's obviously a big game tomorrow because that is probably one of the ones you'd look on paper away from home. Everton still with a slight chance of getting European football if they win that game. But I think they will get through. It's the one I'm looking at is the Bournemouth away game. I think it's their second last game. And it's on a Tuesday night down in Bournemouth, and it's after the cup final as well.
Okay.
So it's only 3 days after that. So I think that will be the tough one. But I just think it will go down to this, and I think it will go down to the last game regardless.
I know.
But I really don't know who will call it, because I mean Arsenal have gone 3 clear now in goal difference after that win yesterday,
and 6 points clear.
6 points clear. But you would back City just to win all 5 of those games as well. Like, you just,
I know, it would so be them to do it. Like,
yeah, they can just kick into gear at a certain point. But you just never know. You really don't know. I think a huge part of it will be Rodri's fitness as well. I think he's a slight injury date for Monday. But yeah, should be an interesting end to the season. I mean, Tyler. I mean, even though it's kind of Champions League is kind of all to play for, or it's all kind of confirmed now, the title race and the relegation battle still all to play for.
But it's the Europa League and the Europa Conference is what's getting exciting. I want Der Quivine in one of them.
Hopefully it'd be nice to see another Cork fella on the European stage. And he has fair European experience already, Quivine.
He does.
But yeah, be interesting to see, could he get little Brentford in there?
We will now move on to rugby. UL Bohemians claimed their third consecutive Energia Women's All-Ireland League title at the Aviva Stadium recently. Munster and UL Bohemians scrum half Abby Salter Townsend spoke to the Big Red Benches' Ger McCarthy about her club's third Energia League title in a row and looked ahead to Munster's upcoming defence of their provincial Munster Women's rugby title.
Now, UL Bohemians claimed their third consecutive Energia Women's All-Ireland League title at the Aviva Stadium just recently. Joining us now here on the Big Red Bench is Munster and UL Bohemians scrum half Abby Salter Townsend. Abby, you're very welcome back to the bench. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you here. First of all, congratulations to UL Bohs, three in a row. And second of all, congratulations to you, three All-Ireland medals in the back pocket. A lovely feeling at the end of a very, very long season.
Yeah, it's unreal. Like, Sunday was so, so special. I think we've worked really hard all season, and to come out on top is always a really good feeling.
Boy, were you pushed all the way by Blackrock College. It took an 83rd minute with try from Katrina Finn to get you over the line. You've had some great battles with this particular team, but what was it, do you think? I mean, you mentioned, I think, in a couple of interviews I've read that, you know, you've been here before, and I suppose the experience of being in that situation and being behind at half time and being behind late in the game. But what an effort and a team effort it took to get you over the line against Blackrock.
Yeah, like, we knew coming out on Sunday, Blackrock are a really, really good side. Like, obviously having Maeve Oak playing for them as their captain, and Abby Moyles, who was with us last year, was their 10 this year. So, like, we knew coming into it, especially after our last league game against them, you know, they came out on top down in Anacotti. That was a really tough game as well. So it's no mean feat to go out and beat them in the Aviva. But yeah, an incredible feeling, and what a way to do it.
Yes, Katrina Finn getting over just to keep everybody's heart rate going right up to the final whistle. You mentioned just how close it's been this year. Like, you finished joint top of the table with Blackrock, identical record, 16 wins, 2 losses. They have been basically not the only challenge that you got this particular year, but have you found as well, Abby, just in the last couple of years, before we just get into winning a third title, likes of Railway Union, likes of Old Belvedere, likes Galwegians as well, shown up as well this year. How is the standard of the Energia Women's League now, and how as much has it progressed in your eyes over the last 3 years?
Yeah, the standard is getting better the whole time. You know, you've got young girls from all around the country who are coming up who want to play AIL, and like, the standard has risen a lot over the last couple of years, and it's great to see because it makes the competition all that more interesting, having more teams in contention for the top and people always fighting to get in that top four. And it's just, I think it's great to build on from here, and it can only get better.
Yeah, and it certainly helped push you and push the standards, I suppose, for you all, boys. You would have been the yardstick for so long for the first couple of years. Last year it was close. Couldn't have got much closer this year. Do you find as well that it makes it, you know, going back for pre-season this year, was that bit easier because, like, you had to hit the ground running if you wanted to retain this title?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we said at the start of the year in our first meeting that, like, our goal is to come out on top again, and we wanted to go 3 in a row. But we knew that wasn't going to be easy. So we put in a lot of hard work at the start of the season, before Christmas, you know, when we had our full squad before girls went away for national duty and Celtic Cup and stuff. So we knew that we had a lot of hard work to do, but with the bunch that we have, some incredible players, like, and we're quite close, it makes it easier because we live in each other's pockets, as we like to say sometimes. And it's just, it makes it a lot easier, you know, being that close with a bunch of girls like that to put the work in, and you want to do it for everyone else on the pitch as well. And everyone off the pitch, like our backroom staff, were incredible this year. And it's just great to say that we actually achieved our goals from the start of the season.
Yeah, you mentioned achieving goals, you mentioned winning leagues, but what a squad you've got. Getting into this team is not easy, and that's the first issue, that you've got to be on your game just to get in and get into the starting 15. But just based on that, I mean, how important is Chloe Pearce as a captain and a leader on and off the pitch for you?
Yeah, I mean, the word legend, it shouldn't be used lightly, but it's absolutely the only way to describe her. Like, you know, she's such a leader on the pitch. Like, she'll take us to that dark place and take us back out of it as well, knowing that we have the ability to do that, and the confidence in her and in her and the rest of us as well. Like, it's so special, and she's iconic to say the least, and I think it's fair to say we wouldn't be where we are without her leading us and keeping us in check as well at times.
And another player I just wanted to highlight, because I know you know her well and you've played alongside her in the fly half in the scrum half position, and that's Kate Flannery. I mean, she's I won't call her a poster girl for Irish women's rugby, but she is the kind of person that you do see a lot in the media because of her position at number 10. There's just how good a 10 is she, Abby, from a scrum half's point of view, and what is it about her that makes her so good?
Kate's one of my closest friends on the team, which definitely helps, but like, she's incredible. She's such a calm head. It doesn't matter if we're under the posts and we're losing, and she never panics. She always knows what she's doing. She will direct us to exactly where we need to be. She's so easy to play with because I always know where she is because her communication is so good, and she plays such good heads up rugby that she's always looking up. She can see three phases ahead, and if I do what Kate's telling me, then I know something good is going to happen and we're fine. Like, she's just incredible to stay that calm in a position like that when we're under the pump. Like, it's admirable.
And that's a good point you make there, because I noticed watching as well and watching back the game again afterwards, you're not afraid to tell each other when something's going well, but you're certainly not afraid to tell each other when something is going wrong. And I think it's the ability, it's I see an element of high performance in that, and that there's a expectation levels of all the players within the team to hit those standards, and you remind each other out in the pitch. Like, obviously you're all great friends, as you said, you've been living in each other's pockets, but that's a key sign. I mean, you're up against Abigail Conan there for that number 9 jersey. You're fighting for the Munster jersey. You've got to take your chances when they get there. But the ability of your teammates to drive you, Abby, I mean, it's one of the hallmarks of this UL Boas setup, not just this year, but over the last 3 years. I would imagine that's the way it is in training too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, that's the benefit of being close with the girls, is that if you do make a mistake, they will tell you, but they're only telling you because they know that you can be better. The pressure wouldn't be on us as a squad if we didn't set such high standards for ourselves. We know that we can achieve these goals, but we can only do so by making mistakes and fixing them in training. We've always said, like, look, this is the place where we make mistakes, because when we bring it out onto the pitch, we know that it won't happen again because we fixed it. If something goes wrong, this is how we fix it, and we just go and do that and it won't happen again. And it's really important that we are confident enough to talk to each other, whether it's good or bad, knowing that it's not personal, it's just for the benefit of the team.
How much can you tell me about the celebrations?
They went on for quite a while. Unfortunately, I was back to work on Monday afternoon, so I missed out on day 2 and day 3. They were still going on all day Tuesday as well. Look, I think we deserve them, and it's special. And I was gutted. Now, there's a lot of videos going around the place, so I felt like I was still there, even though I was out in Glenstall. But yeah, Sunday was incredible. The bus down was great. When we got back to Limerick, went to a few different places, and just the support there waiting for us was unreal. And yeah, it was very, very special, and we really definitely enjoyed it.
Just on that, there's a growing appreciation, I think, of women's rugby in this country now. It's gone from pandering a little bit to aren't they great, to hang on a second, this international team is serious. It's got something about them. You know, they're on the right track here. Have you found, maybe not necessarily with more people watching it, but more people appreciating what you do and the level that UL Boas and Blackrock played in that final, especially? What a great advert for how rugby should be played at a high level. We don't want, obviously, look, you can't see, you can't be, was there for a long time in the GAA and the LGFA and the Camogie trying to get girls to play rugby. But it's so popular right now, Abby, that a performance like that from UL Boas, the domination and the type and the level that you're playing, the seriousness that it's given in the media, how important is that in the next couple of years, especially for the next gen of young female rugby players to come through?
Yeah, look, it's so important, and I don't think any of us will be able to stress how important it is to have people watching us play at a high standard and look and go that they've come so far. And as stressful as it was playing at the end of that game on Sunday, it was probably great viewing. And I think if a game is that exciting, people are more likely to come back and watch it again because they know that women's rugby especially, we love a free-flowing game. It's a little bit less structured than the men's game, and I think that makes it more exciting to watch, and you just kind of don't know what happens next or what's going to happen next, and it's just great to see. And the more that we can kind of show the country and show Munster how high of a level that we can get to, that we'd love to have more and more people watching us.
Well said. And just finally on that, you mentioned Munster. Now that the domestic season is over, you'll be turning your attention back to provincial matters and the defence of the women's interprovincial title last year. What a performance by Munster to go and win that title and in the final against Leinster. Obviously, you got to get onto the squad. Then you got to get onto the team. But such is the depth of talent in Munster right now, Abby. I mean, it's an achievement in itself just to make that 30-35.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. Like, it'll be nice now to have a few weeks off before getting back into the hectic side of interprovincial rugby. You know, we'll probably start some remote training in June, and then they'll have an extended squad out in July, and then hopefully can get into that final squad for the games in August. But yeah, it's something I'm looking forward to, and after my break, I'll be looking forward to push on.
Excellent stuff. We'll be looking forward to seeing how you get on and Munster throughout that interprovincial series. But for now, UL Bowes, three-time Energy Women's All-Ireland League title winners and three times All-Ireland Scrum Half medal winner, Abby Salter Townsend. Thank you very, very much for your time here today on the Big Red Bench.
Thank you.
The Big Red Bench.
Big Red Bench.
On Cork's
Red FM.
Red FM. The Big Red Bench.
Cork's
Red FM.
Hello and good evening. You are listening to The Big Red Bench with myself, Orla O'Leary. And now last week we had Ciarán O'Sullivan, Ballincollig Basketball's player coach. And he is speaking again after their amazing double winning season. And he was speaking with Rory O'Hagan.
And talking about that final win over Cleist and what type of game it was.
Really tough. It was like we knew it would be tough physically. They had been in three finals in a row, so maybe they had a different type of pressure and they wanted to get over the line. And they have a few elder statesmen as well, like us, that you never know. Like, basketball's funny. You're never too far away from getting to the finals, but it can change so quickly. And they probably felt that, you know, we might not get back here. This is three in a row. What an achievement for them. So we knew it would be really tough. And I just have a feeling, no matter how much we try and avoid it or keep the pace, it's going to be a dogfight. And it was 79-71, so defensively did really well to hold them down to that, because they're a 90 point per game team. So did our job defensively, but yeah, it was a real tough, tight, nerves on both sides. First quarter I think was really low scoring, but there was moments in it. Yeah, it wasn't the cup final, it was never going to be, because there was kind of a magic to that. You know, we scored 23 pointers, you know, it's never been done. I think Luttrell had 8 threes in that cup final. I think the record was 9. Kieran Shannon had a really good article about John Carson in that final back in the late 80s. So it was, yeah, just a tough final, physically tough. And I think the difference between the cup and the league as well is just that extra 10 or 11 games at the end of the year, you're just exhausted. You're just you're crawling over the line.
Yeah, I think John McHale said it best. He said your offense won the cup final, your defense won the Super League. For Adrian to step up, 17 points, MVP. For you as a coach, he must have gone brilliant, class. But if he was a brother, he must be going, class, that's my brother.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He deserved it, you know. He deserved it. And that probably goes back to the pros that we had this year. They weren't selfish in that way. They just made the right basketball play. And I think our threat is 3-point shooters, and Adrian is a good shooter, but his main skill is attacking the basket. And he's fearless, he's very brave. And they were staying at home on our shooters. They weren't helping off. So Adrian essentially had a 1v1 a lot of times down the floor, used the speed, got to the basket, and that was huge for us, because those couple of layups that he got, and then he got confident and hit a few outside shots as well. So yeah, it's massive, and it just, I suppose, it's a testament to the team, the kind of level of player we have, and you know, the pros especially, just giving that space to the Irish guys, and vice versa, it works both ways. It's kind of a pick your poison, and I think on any day, you know, Keelan Kearns or Dylan or other guys could have stepped up as well and got that. So, but delighted for him personally, because he's put a lot of time in, a lot of work in it, and he had a great game, in fairness. Yeah, massive.
I think three of your lads were named on the All-Star team as well, was it? So that's kind of a testament, I suppose, to how well you've been.
Yeah, that's huge, because sometimes they can be picked by committees, but the nice thing about that was the coaches in the league selected that, so I think that showed that I didn't have a lot of coaching to do.
Are you allowed to vote for your own players? Not actually, when you're putting in the votes, are you allowed to vote for your own players?
No. Yeah, and three of the lads on the first team, Adrian's on the second team, so essentially, you know, you four of the top 10 and selected by the coaches in the league. So that's really nice for Ballincollig, you know, to get that recognition, and fair play to the lads, it was well deserved.
And for you getting coach of the year as well, that must be quite the plaudit, like quite the feather in your cap.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. It's nice to be recognised. And I suppose so much goes into that, the coaching side of it. My assistant coach was great this year, Matt Hall. He came down from Limerick. And I it's the player coach part of it, I suppose, is the real challenge. But having great players and that trust, you know, the three pros and Adrian and Keelan and Dylan Ronan, guys we've soldiered with for so long, and then having Matt Hall. So the support was there, and great mentors, my dad and my uncle Kieran and Daniel. So the people around me have the confidence in me as well. But yeah, no, it was nice. It was nice for us to achieve the two trophies and the All-Stars for the lads, Adrian getting the MVP. There was a lot of firsts this year, winning the first National Cup for Ballincollig. And as a Cork team outside of Neptune and Blue Demons, who historically are so brilliant, yeah. And you know, we look up to both clubs just in terms of what they've achieved over the last 50-60 years, you know. So yeah, no, it's cool, it's really nice.
And you had great support up in Tallaght as well.
Incredible. I thought the cup final was amazing from the standpoint of Tralee had a huge crowd as well, and the atmosphere that, and we just were the aggressor in that game and came out on top early. The league final was special because all that went around with the blockades, you know, we left that morning, the Sunday morning, we got off the motorway, we were forced off the motorway at Cashel. We never got back on it until we got we came in through. We just looked at the maps and said, right, if we pick this, and we went down through Atai and in through Blessington. So we were in Wicklow. At one point we went all the way over the other side to avoid the madness. But yeah, for some of the fans to get up there that day, it was such an effort, you know, and so appreciated by the players, and it made a huge difference because the final was essentially an away game. Colester, 20 minutes up the M50, they obviously had a huge crowd there, and you know, and some of the Glanmire crowd, in fairness, stayed on as well. It was a long day for them to support us as well, so great to have such a support under those conditions.
Speaking of Glanmire, your wife Claire, obviously an integral part of that team, she's one of the best basketball players in the country. Were you able to watch much of that game and beforehand, or are you just kind of focusing on your own?
Not really. It was strange because my two kids, our kids were there, Emma and Dylan, and my parents were looking after them. Claire's parents were absolutely huge basketball people, you know, in Arnmore and Galway. They were actually in Australia, out at a relative's wedding. So yeah, so it was kind of, I got into the gym, got into the arena in Tallaght maybe just after the start of the second half, so I got to watch a bit of it. My kids were there. I didn't want to get too distracted. They're quite young. My parents looking after them, so went into the dressing room, got changed, and came back out and got a lot of the last quarter. So yeah, but unfortunately, yeah, you know, it wasn't to be for them, which would have been lovely for some of those girls, Anya McKenna, you know, and Claire in particular, Miriam Lockery, you know, towards the end of their career to get another trophy. But they have a lot. Don't worry, they're not.
Are the kids mad into basketball? Do they have a choice?
They are. They like going to see the games. They like, and we're lucky with MTU and the Marlowe, like there's plenty of space for them to run around if they do get fed up of watching. But yeah, they're mad. Dylan loves the ball. Yeah, he's mad throwing the ball around, dribbling the ball around. Yeah, he's only 18, 19 months. So yeah, I don't think they'll have much of a choice. They'll be pulled and dragged to games anyway, whether they like it or not. So yeah.
100%. Away from the court, how do you relax? I know you're a big moving and gigs guy. So what kind of things do you do to take your mind off basketball?
I try and watch movies, like basketball gets in the way of watching movies, like if I can, and you know, since I've had kids as well, that's been a challenge.
Bluey now and
Bluey, yeah, Peppa Pig and Paw Patrol, yeah. I tried actually to bring some of the movies and music into the team as best I could. I actually showed them a couple of clips. Music is a big thing, you know. Josh Steele, who's the Bosman, he's from England. He'd always have music on a training or in the gym, and I like that. I like, you know, them to be comfortable if we did an individual workout on a Wednesday, and he'd have the music blaring, you know, and he'd have reggae, R&B, hip hop, he'd have all different stuff on. But just I'd be a big advocate for that, just whatever makes him comfortable. Over Christmas, again, you talk about trying to sustain a season, I showed them, none of them had seen a Schindler's List. That's fine. One of them, Colin Blunt, he's the big character in our team, and he's like, is that the one about the Jews? If that was it, none of them had seen it, but he knew it was something to do with that. But I just wanted to show them one of the last scenes with Liam Neeson towards the end of the war's ended, and he's kind of saying, you know, I could have done more.
Yeah.
I could have done more. You know, I could have. He's looking at his car. I could have sold my car. That could be 20 more and 20 more people on the list. And I was saying to him, look, not comparing the Holocaust and basketball or making anything like that, but just that sort of message of, can you do more? What can you ask your teammates? What can you ask yourself? That sort of thing. Trying to just slip in different messages like that, and not, it can't be all Ballincollig versus Neptune or Ballincollig versus Limerick Celtics and watching video and, you know, critiquing them. It's maybe throwing in something like that. It gives a different message. Mm-hmm. Tried to put that in. Doesn't always work, but that, I thought that was that hit home with them. They enjoyed that. Some of them said they might go and watch the full 3 hours. Yeah,
it's an incredible film. It's an incredible film. I know we're both big Coen Brothers guys as well, and the Big Lebowski is obviously a huge part of my life and a huge favourite of mine. But when you look at the Coens, I suppose, which are the films that stand out for you?
That's something I should have showed them, like the Big Lebowski. I think that whole bowling alley scene, I think obviously the Coens do an unbelievable job at, maybe it's the extreme version of characters, but you had that bowling alley scene with John Goodman and Jeff Bridges and Buscemi, and like they're all you've the laid back, you've the like the Goodman, you know, like when we scrimmage, I always laugh at this when I watch it, is like you have the wily veterans like Goodman, and that going, you cross the line, Smokey. Yeah, market zero, that whole
I'm laughing.
They're what's his line? This is in Vietnam. There are rules here. You know, you'll have older players kind of coming with that to the younger guys, going, you know, if we're playing a kind of competitive scrimmage. So yeah, it's maybe showing them something like that. Just like these are, you know, or you have the Danny, like the Buscemi card, the quiet young guys, and just try and keep them engaged. But yeah, there's something, every time you watch films like that, you get something new, don't you? It's
100%. Absolutely love that film. Music wise, I suppose, what's in your rotation at the moment?
I'm listening to a lot of Massive Attack at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
I've mezzanine on in the car there. I'm listening to the Cocteau Twins, like Elizabeth Fraser, sort of teardrop song. Listen to a bit of that. Listen to a bit of Geese, a bit of Cameron Winter. That's kind of the new album. Now I'm listening to, but all sorts of stuff going on. Yeah.
It's good to keep your mind off basketball, I suppose, and I suppose makes a change from watching film, I suppose, every night of the week, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're constantly looking at your own team, scouting the opposition, so it's good to have ways and means to switch off. Interstellar is a big one. I kind of, when I'm working, I like to have the Hans Zimmer, the music on in the background, but that whole, you can probably relate to that, you know, I think most, you know, professionals can, whether it's work or sport, that kind of sacrifice, you know, with your kids, you mentioned that, and like, what's selfish and what's you doing, making the most of something like the two trophies there, it's great to have them, but then maybe you're missing, you know, you talk to lads, they're going up in a bus to Sligo or Belfast and they're missing a wedding or a birthday or maybe a quiet moment at home, and that whole Interstellar, I was talking to a few of the players about that during the year. That's a movie I kind of go back to every now and then, or different scenes in it, it's cool.
Certainly an incredible film. And Kieran, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Massive congratulations for all your success. I know you've had a week off, but I'd already imagine you're thinking about next year already.
Yeah, that's the natural thing is you get hooked into it, don't you? And you just want to keep it going, and just whether it's playing or coaching, and find ways to improve. And players then are, you know, you've younger guys then who probably feel didn't play as much, or what can I, you know, if guys coming up to you going, what do I need to do, whether it's strength work or on the court skills, whatever it might be, what can I do to get on the court and perform? And then you may have other guys then on the other side who are, you know, getting married and having kids of their own, and kind of you're probably just saying, right, need to give these guys a push. But yeah, no, that's great. They're all good problems to have when you've had the year we've had. So just trying to enjoy it, you know, as best you can, but all the time in the back of your head knowing, you know, people are coming for you next year. You know.
How many years in basketball is this for you now?
That was my 16th season.
So what keeps coming back?
I don't know if what I do if I didn't have it. It's just ingrained in me. And definitely the Ballincollig part of it, you're kind of, because it's such a community aspect to it, like, I remember after we'd won the cup, walking down the parade and the Ballincollig St. Patrick's Day parade with my son, and going, this is class. Like, the National Cup was there, and I had my Dylan up on my shoulders and kind of going, this is great, because this is the street I walked down 1,000 times in my life, and there's my family, and my two cousins ran the team this year, Jamie and Ron, and Adrian, my brother, my fam, everyone's involved, you know. And that's I suppose that's the big thing, that connection. And once you step away from that, that's a big part of your life, you know. It gets harder as you get older, it certainly does, and you have to do so much to get on the court, the gym work, and that's the stuff I'm not going to look forward to this time around. But yeah, once you get out there and just competing, I love to compete. I love to be part of that. It's part of who I am. And win or lose, you know, you take a risk when you coach, because you know, when you're losing, things don't go well, and you're going to be judged regardless. But I like putting myself out there and going, if we're prepared, I feel like we can be successful, and there's a good crop there, and just young kids too. And I was a young kid too in Ballincollig, looking up, and we'd known really to look up the way to look in at Demons and Neptune, and go, I know now, just from talking to parents, a lot of young kids, you mentioned your own daughters, but going to the quarterfinal, same final, Glanmire. And once the kids get that bug, and I know there's kids in Ballincollig who have that, and it's like, well, let's try and be as good as we can, as competitive as we can, and try and hook more kids into it, and maybe and take it on further, you know.
Colin, a pleasure, buddy. Congratulations on all your success this year.
Thank you.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
You're listening to The Big Red Bench with myself, Orla O'Leary. And up next, we have Sonia O'Sullivan. And she joined almost 500 school children at a special event hosted by Westport Athletics Club, supported by the Dare to Believe programme. The Olympic Federation of Ireland Schools programme, sponsored by Allianz Ireland. And she's been speaking to Off the Ball's Rachel Sheehan.
Beautiful morning up here in Westport. You've just been given the tricks of the trade to about 450 kids. How are you feeling?
Great. It was super to be here today, and you know, to have so many kids out here on a beautiful day at the track. And you know, they were all so excited and you know, energetic, and you know, wanted to do stuff. You know, they were full of energy. So hopefully they can bottle that, and you know, I suppose be inspired to, you know, to keep doing it and to, you know, join their local athletic club.
Yeah, there was almost an announcement at the start saying it's great to put the phones away and get outside. It must be really encouraging to see so many young kids like that just going for it. And I mean, none of them were holding back. I think they were putting you under pressure for a little bit.
They were, you know. I mean, it was a very stop start. It felt like kind of running for the bus. You know, I need to get myself into a rhythm before I'm feeling any good running these days. But you know, it was great to join in with the kids for a run and to see them so enthusiastic and full of energy. And you just hope that they will find the sport that they love and enjoy, and you know, and go after it.
And just for not even kids these days, but we've seen such a growth in run clubs, communities. I know you run the own 10 mile down in Cove, the Sonia O'Sullivan 10 mile. It must be so different to when you started out running just the roads of Cove, seeing how many communities there are out there now.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, there's so many people running now. I know when I was running, there was maybe two other people who were running in the town, and you knew who they were and you knew what time they were going out. And but now, whenever I'm home, you know, any time of day or night, there's people out running the roads, and you know, not just by themselves but groups of people, and always training for something. So it's great for people to see that, you know, if you set yourself a goal or a target and then they train for it and prepare for it and work together, that they can actually go out and enjoy it, and it becomes a big adventure. And I think that's, you know, how sport all started for me. It was all a big adventure, you know, the places that you travelled and the friends that you met, and you know, the running was just kind of the excuse to do it. And that's probably what a lot of people are doing now as well. And you know, probably young people need to think of it that way. So yeah, not think of it as hard work and not think of it as a sacrifice, but think of it as an enjoyable activity that you can do with your friends. And then, you know, you might taste success, and then when you taste success, then you definitely become, I suppose, inspired to do better, and you want to come back and be even more successful.
Yeah, so it's not even about the end goal, just about getting out there. Any advice for someone who's maybe had a bit of a bad experience with running before, or saying like, I've tried it before and I didn't like it, but they want to get back into it?
I think, you know, a lot of people, maybe they try too hard sometimes, and sometimes you just have to slow down and you know, just find, go to a nice place. You know, don't just run out your door and run around the block, but go to a nice park or a field or a trail or by the river or by the sea, and I think running, you can do it in lots of really nice places, and you know, I definitely love to go to, you know, nice places when I visit places like, where can I run? And you know, park run is now something that is very attractive to people, and even if you're not in a place on a Saturday morning at 9:30, you can still look up the parkrun webpage and see where they do it, and it's always generally in a nice place, a nice park where you can go out there and enjoy the nature, and you know, whatever the weather, just get out there and do some steps.
Brilliant. Were you keeping a keen eye on the London Marathon at the weekend?
I was. Well, I was tracking it on my phone. I was actually out on a bike ride. It's very hard to get me to sit down and watch something, you know, especially on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, when, you know, that's the time to go out and meet people and do your own activities. So when we stopped for coffee, I was checking what was going on, and I was like, I couldn't believe that.
You expecting it?
Not really. I hadn't really thought about it that much, you know, but it was... I mean, I think it was inevitable. You know, I think once Kipchoge broke the 2 hours, even though it was, you know, manufactured and a fabricated event where they, you know, made everything perfect for him, it showed, you know, what can be achieved. And then I think people started to believe that, yeah, this is possible, and but maybe not so soon. I think it happened a lot sooner than people thought it would. So probably the advancements in the shoe technology definitely helps a lot.
You're not planning on running out and buying the Adidas ones that he was wearing straight away?
No, I have a few different types of all the nice shoes. All right, I call them my fast shoes, and sometimes you need them just to keep up in the park run these days.
Are the kids as well putting you through your paces? I'd say you'd want them halfway through the laps.
Absolutely. I know, I had the slow shoes on today, you know, the tractors I call them. But yeah, no, you can't wear the fast shoes every day. You have to save them for special occasions.
And interesting enough with Sebastian, his sponsorship with Adidas, they paid about £50,000 for him to be tested really regularly, just to clear up any doubt that this record that he achieved wasn't true doping. What did you think of that?
Well, you know, it's very proactive, I suppose, to be doing that. And, you know, it's like every time a record is broken these days, you hope that it's a true record and, you know, that the athletes are doing it without cheating. And you know, most are, but there's a few who are not. And so I think it's important that someone stands up and says they're willing to be tested, you know, any time of day or night, and you know, more regularly than normal. And you know, we just hope that this record stands, and that, you know, Sebastian becomes a hero like Eliud Kipchoge, and you know, he becomes a household name, and you know, to see where he goes from here.
Speaking of household names, someone's becoming one here is Kate O'Connor, and everyone was wondering how she could keep up with the unbelievable year that she had last year, and she did that in Poland. How excited are you for her as a prospect?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, Kate, you know, she's been able to back up medal after medal, and you know, it's a tough event that she does, because you know, it's, she's going to do a lot of different events with a lot of different, you know, training to do that. So I think for her, it's all about keeping her body in one piece and managing herself very well. So yeah, hopefully she'll hold it together, especially going towards the LA Olympics.
Her coach as well is her father, Michael. Coming from such a family steeped in athletics, you've got your daughters Sophie and your husband Nick. Is there any thoughts for the O'Sullivans to take on that kind of family dynamic and coaching?
No, we do coach, but we don't coach Sophie.
Okay.
And she prefers it that way, so we leave her off.
Too many different dynamics at play at once.
No, it's like, you know, it's, I mean, even though, you know, we don't all live together at the same, you know, now that she's grown up and she's off doing her own adventures as she went to college in America. But, you know, she has her own coach, and if we try not to be knowing too much, and try not to discuss it too much at the dinner table.
Do you try and feed through some little bit of advice, or a lot of the time is it saying, I know you need to learn from these mistakes yourself for them to really kind of settle in?
I used to before, and particularly when Sophie was younger, and we probably spent a lot more time in the car driving to different places. But now, I mean, I think I probably have a bit more influence on her when she's injured and things are not going well than when things are going well. And she's learned a lot from injuries over the past couple of years, and she's managed to get herself back. And so now we trust her coach, and she trusts her coach. And I think, you know, it's important for all athletes to listen to one person. Sometimes if you're listening to more, you know, too many people, then you get confused and you start to question things.
Yeah.
So it's best to, you know, to trust and believe in your coach. And, you know, you know, things don't happen overnight. It takes time and you have to be patient sometimes. And, you know, it can take a few years to really, you know, have a solid foundation and to be able to go out there and do the best, you know, and do what you're capable of.
How proud were you just to see her take on this path, but especially when she made it to the Olympics, becoming a mother-daughter Olympian duo? It must have been really special.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Sophie, she made the World Championships in 2023, and that was a bit of a surprise. We didn't expect it. She hadn't really planned for it. It was a bit quicker than we expected, based on her progressions. And, you know, then each year she's qualified for the next championship. So that's been really great. It means that you can prepare specifically for it and you're not running around chasing times throughout the season. So this year she's qualified for the European Championships, and she seems to be training pretty good right now. So yeah, hopefully she'll have a good year.
Someone else we'll be keeping a keen eye on in the European Championships is Rashida Adeleke. What are you hoping from her in 2026? I mean, she's already had record-breaking run so far this year. Things are looking up.
Yeah, I mean, Rashida, she had an injury last year, so she wasn't able to compete. So she had a bit of a year out, pretty much, because she wasn't at the championship last year. So hopefully she get herself back on the European stage this year. And she was second 2 years ago, so, you know, she needs to get back up there. And to, you know, some, you need the evidence, you know, in races, to show that your training is going well. So hopefully she will have a good season and get out there and, you know, challenge for the medals in Birmingham this summer.
We had the unfortunate passing of Ronnie Delaney last month. I know your circles came into contact with each other when you were just 17 years old.
Yeah, I mean, myself and Ronnie, we definitely crossed paths a number of times. He phoned me up probably every year. you didn't miss a phone call from Ronnie. And if he was ringing on the phone, you definitely answered it. He was someone I, you know, really respected and looked up to, and, you know, was lucky enough to spend quite a bit of time with. So, yeah, no, it was very sad, you know, not to, for Ronnie's passing, and, you know, a piece of Irish history, you know, that we had to say goodbye to. And, you know, he was there in Sydney when I won my Olympic medal. He said he was hoping for the Queen to step up and take the gold and sit alongside him, but, you know, we got the silver medal, and so, yeah, maybe a princess.
I know you spoke and you've written about it, saying that no one's ever a former Olympian. You're once an Olympian, always an Olympian. Is that something that you would remember specifically from Ronnie?
Yeah, well, that was, you know, Ronnie, he said that to every Olympian that he met, and, you know, he was always very upset if someone wrote in the paper or mentioned on the radio or anything former Olympian. That was not a thing. And so it's something that sticks with me, and I'm always, you know, quick to remind people of that as well when they say that, because, you know, we are all Olympians, and, you know, it's a special family, it's a special group of people, and it's growing every 4 years.
And just for yourself, what kind of training are you doing now? When you were speaking to the kids earlier, you were talking a lot about seasons and cycling. Is that where you're getting your fix?
Well, I run every second day, and so then I have to fill in the gaps. So before, I used to run fast every second day and fill in the gaps with slow running, but now it's with recovery methods. And so, yeah, I like to go in the sea when the water temperature rises a little bit. And yeah, I go out cycling as well, and a few groups in Cove that I link up with, and Australia, wherever I am. It seems to be easier to link up with a swimming or a cycling group than a running group, because the running is just too hard. It's hard to run and talk. So I like to just do the runs by myself.
And if you don't mind me asking, what are you running now at the moment for, like, a 5K? Put us all to shame.
Not very fast. No, I'm not breaking 20 minutes, which, you know, I'd love to do it again, but I don't know, it'll be hard work to do that. We're actually, Ray Darcy threw out something there yesterday. He wanted people, he said, for the to break 2 hours for the marathon, you had to run 17 seconds for every 100 metres. So I think that's the challenge for the summer for myself, Rob, and Durville, is to see if we can get to 17 seconds for 100 metres.
Oh, fantastic. We look forward to that progress.
Yeah, I look forward to it too. I'll try up here now before I leave. I'll see where I'm at and where I've got to go to, what work I have to do.
Bit of altitude training on Kropatcher behind
us, right,
maybe.
Yeah.
Sonia, thank you so much.
Okay, all right, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Big Red Bench with myself, Orla O'Leary. And before I go, at 7 p.m, Tottenham and Aston Villa take each other on, but there is a lot of changes from the Villa side. Lindelof, Mings, Matson are in for Konsa, Torres and Dine are out. and Bogard, Sancho, Barkley start instead of Onana, McGinn and Buendia. And Abraham leads the line instead of Watkins. Now that's mad, taking your captain out. But I get, like, they don't really care about this match. They pretty much have Champions League. Like, only one game really will make the difference for them. But then we have Udogie returns at fullback and Spence drops out. And Palinha and Tell start for Bissouma and Simons. And Richarlison up front in place of Solanke. Now he actually is injured. But all the others are very, very random changes. And I don't know, like, it's not good because Tottenham are making a lot of changes as well. But I don't know. We will have to see. And there will be a lot more updates on this on next week's Big Red Bench. So I've been Orla O'Leary here on the Big Red Bench. Coming up, we have Mags with Green on Red.
The Big Red Bench.
Big Red Bench.
On Cork.
Red FM.